Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies.
Hey everyone, I'm super excited today to have on our Crypto Nights podcast, Toby Simpson of Fetch.ai. Toby, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Very excited to have you. Why don't we kick it off, Toby, with a brief description of your own background, and then we'll get to what Fetch.ai does.
Yeah, sure. So I come from a computer games background, funnily enough. I was developing computer games back in the Commodore Amiga days in the early 90s. So that dates me, sort of developing large programs in 68,000 assembly language and getting totally lost in software complexity. And funnily enough, actually, software complexity, or rather the phrase that complexity is software silent killer, is one that really stuck with me. The idea that there might be a different approach to managing, creating of these huge programs that might manage that more effectively, but might allow more of the complexity, the interesting stuff, the grays between blacks and white, to actually emerge as a property of a larger population of simple things interacting together. I got to be the producer and director of the Creatures series in the mid to late 90s, which was a real pleasure because we created a biologically inspired reinforcement learning agent out of modeled chemical emitters and receptors and reactions and all sorts of groovy things. And this thing was able to learn how to exist in its own environment with no human intervention at all. I thought that was spectacularly cool. And if that philosophy could be used to do that, maybe it could be used to build huge virtual worlds. And I had the pleasure of doing just that in the early 2000s, making these massive worlds full of hundreds of thousands of individual objects all interacting. And it meant that these worlds would adapt to the people that were in them, rather than us specifying a whole stack of rules. And that's one of the things with modern computer games. A lot of the stuff that you see is all that beauty is really just scenery. It's not real. If you strip away the scenery, there's very little there. And human beings are creative. You stick them in a space and they want to do interesting things. And I love that approach that you could potentially knock a tree down and make a log cabin out of it without any part of the program having to learn about log cabins. So that's a long-winded way of saying that I love the idea that problems can solve themselves. And that was part of the thing that led us towards coming up with the ideas behind Fetch.
Awesome. Well, why don't we dig into Fetch? How did you get the idea? What is the backstory? There's always a backstory, Toby.
And those you're not wrong.
Tumble on it is usually exciting.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is always a backstory. And this one's quite a good one because it's safe to say that it's more than a decade in the making. Wow. When I first met the other co-founders of Fetch, and we were talking about these big environments and all these individual objects, and we were kind of thinking, well, you know, a lot of the kind of stuff we were trying to do in these worlds is similar to the problems we're trying to solve in the economy. That there's all these moving parts and they're really, really complicated, and trying to manage them all from the top down is like pushing hot water uphill. It's really difficult. And we were thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if the individual component parts that make up these problems could, be in charge of their own destinies, could make decisions independently of human intervention, that they could effectively solve the problems themselves, a sort of a machine-to-machine economy. But we couldn't figure out how to get the scale. My experience in virtual worlds was very much client server based, you know, where the server's the bit you trust and all the clients, you have to treat them as though you don't trust them. And that's how you ensure integrity in the world. And I could make worlds with potentially hundreds of thousands of objects, but you know, the real world is busy. You start having autonomous agents that are digital entities that represent data and hardware. You're talking about billions of these things. I mean, how on earth do you make a space like that? And then, of course, along comes decentralized ledger technology. And you look at this stuff and scratch your head and say, well, now, actually, this is interesting, because couldn't we now distribute the effort of making an environment that we want and all of these objects across many, many, many computers without actually having to trust any individual machine? Wouldn't this mean that we could create something that had linear scalability, that we could make it as big as we wanted and build in an incentive mechanism to ensure that this network would work? And that was what really led us to Fetch, the idea that we could create this space and put effectively an economic internet a world for machine-to-machine economy, where all these individual moving parts could work together to solve problems on your behalf, or indeed on their own behalf.
That is very exciting. Can we ground this with an example? Can we? So I want our listeners to kind of understand the crux, the heart of Fetch.ai right in the get-go. Can you give us an example, a use case, if you will, of something that could not be solved before, but with Fetch it can be and can be solved elegantly? What would be one such use case or example?
I think all of the problems can be solved now, but just not as effectively, and not in combination, and not by joining them all together in this way. And it requires too much management and too much effort from human beings. And that's the problem, that we have to do all of the work. And with all this computing power, you really expect that work to be done for you. And an example of a problem where this is an issue is, you take energy, for example. The way we do things at the moment is highly centralized. And one of the things that's changing in society is we're getting all of these electric cars around now, and they're batteries. Why shouldn't I boil my kettle off my neighbor's car? Why shouldn't all the individual component parts, the things that generate power, the things that store power, and the things that use it, negotiate with each other autonomously in the background to get the best deal? This would be a network that would be more robust, work better with the more environmentally friendly methods of generating and storing power that we're working on at the moment. And that'll be really interesting. And then there's transportation. I mean, if there's ever an exercise in pushing square pegs in round holes, it's transportation. If you're going anywhere or doing anything, you have to use all sorts of different apps. I mean, great, we've got them all, but you're the one that has to go poking around, finding all the information that you need. And quite honestly, representatives of you, digital representatives, should be going out onto that network. They should be solving all of those problems, and they should be bringing solutions to you without you having to worry about it. And these are the kind of problems from the consumer perspective that are potentially solved by having technology like this.
I see. And so now can we get into how does Fetch do it? How are you building Fetch so that it can solve kind of problems? And if I have a smartphone, can I use Fetch, or do I need a computer? How do I, as a layperson, interact with Fetch? You know, those kinds of things.
Actually, most people will generally interact with Fetch probably off their smartphone, because one of the things that one of the great promises of blockchain is it's a shift of power and control from the centers of the network to the outside. It's about giving you the control over your stuff and ownership over your stuff as well, so that the value that's generated from it comes to you. So, of course, a mobile device is a great example of something that I would see as a roaming population of different agents, that all the different sensors you've got in that device, they're potentially very, very useful. One of the examples I give quite often is that if a whole pile of people on one street suddenly put their phones in their pockets, maybe it's just started raining. And this is the kind of information that if you join together all of this stuff, when a state change occurs, then that's valuable. Now, would I pay a couple of cents to get that information so that either bought an umbrella or got in on a train rather than walking to the station or something like that? Well, yeah, do you know what? I probably would. Because those tiny little value exchanges, they're of no real impact to you as an individual, but what they give you is so much more than just that. So I think a lot of people will interact through mobile devices because it allows them to utilize and get better utilization out of the information and the sensors they already carry. But also it's a great place for your stuff, your representative agents, the ones that know about you, to live. And the idea that that data, all that information, the personal stuff, is yours, encrypted, on your device. And the only thing that's out there on the network are representatives of that. And the Fetch network is taking care, it's acting as this vast dating agency, taking care of ensuring that the agents that want something are placed right next to the agents that have it, or might have it. And I really like that might part of Fetch. The idea that new kinds of interactions are investigated by the network just because of how it works and what it does.
This is crazy, Toby. My brain is buzzing with ideas now. So, for example, if I said, right now, Amazon might have all the information about the books that I buy. Obviously, although this is an audio, you can see the books behind me. So I love to read, and but I have specific interests. So instead of Amazon having that information, somehow over time I'm able to provide fetch.ai that kind of information. It's possible that once in a while I'll get a recommendation for buying a book, or I might say, remember where I parked my car, or let me know if Bitcoin hits $10,000, because I don't want to track it every day. Am I in the right direction? Can I ask all of these kinds of questions?
Yes, yeah, you can, but it's even cooler than that. The fact that you're interested in certain kinds of books means that there might be a representative agent that knows, because you've told it, that's out there positioning itself on the network to find out what kind of books you might be interested in. But all the details of you, the stuff that connects that to you as an individual, they remain private all the time. There's just this digital entity that's running around there, allowing the network to connect it to things that it thinks might be interesting as a result of those preferences. And I think that's really cool. So it's not just a reminder service. It's much better than that, because you don't just have to have one of these representatives that's out there. You could have hundreds of them. It's like having this huge fleet of individuals out there that are representing what you want, out there trying to solve all the individual problems that you might have and presenting them back to you. And I think that's really, really cool. And what we're doing with the network itself is using that huge distributed computer, which is effectively all of the individual nodes that make up this network, using that to crunch all of the numbers, to build this intelligence information, to build this trust information, so that as well as being able to look for objects in this world, to be able to look at the environment, perhaps geographically, they can also look at it from a content perspective. And I love that aspect of it. The fact that you could look from one content area, say politics, towards another one, say history, and see all of the different things that might intersect it, and then position yourself so that the other agents, the other representatives that are out there, you're next to the ones that are important to you. And that's why I do keep referring to it as the ultimate dating agency for value providers. That's what Fetch is doing behind the scenes, making sure that there's the smallest distance and the least friction between an agent that has something and an agent that wants it. And quite a lot of that stuff, incidentally, is going to be agent to agent. It may well be that one agent is trying to build predictions about a particular airport, like when the queues are going to be particularly bad. And it's doing it by buying up these tiny little bits of information from all the people who are standing in those queues off their phones. So they're making a little bit here and a little bit there. And then it's transforming that with some AI and building predictions about what might happen under certain conditions, and then reselling that information. So it means that you'll be able to then potentially buy that for a cent or two and decide when to leave your house to get to the airport. And that's really interesting, because it might well be that when you've bought a piece of information, it may well have been through four or five layers of digital entities before it gets to you. It may have been thousands of individual transactions transforming that data into something more useful.
Very interesting. So now, switch from the use cases, how does this whole thing work economically? If I have a piece of data, let's say, like you said, I'm putting my phone in my pocket because it's raining, and I tell you, okay, I give you permission to take that information and monetize it. And at an aggregate level, if you monetize it, give me a micropayment. Is that how it works?
Yeah, but one thing to remember is it's not actually the data itself that's on the network. It's a representative of that data. So, of course, when the value exchange takes place, all of this stuff is encrypted, and there's a method by them, you know, that's logged on the ledger that the value exchange took place, and so on, and it works like that. But the way in which you create those representatives is quite interesting. One of the things that we're working on and building right now is this network participation app, the idea that you could effectively roll your own agent, that you could go to a page in this mobile app and then drag all the different bits and pieces into the agent that you like, press a button, create it, and then away it goes. And then you can monitor those things. You can create different ones with different combinations of the sensors and perhaps some transformed data, and see which ones work and which ones don't, and look at them all together and monitor and work with all of the different agents that you might create. So that's kind of cool. And in the end, you have complete and utter control over what it is that you're doing with all of these things. And I suspect, actually, I mean, this is one of the things that is common to a lot of the crypto space or just technology generally. I mean, the best examples of technology, of course, are the ones that you don't even notice. They're the ones that seamlessly integrate with your lives in a way that means that you don't have to do an enormous amount of work to do it. This is something that's very important to us with Fetch. The idea that in the end, these problems are meant to be solving themselves and the solutions are the ones that are meant to be coming to you. And that by doing this, by bringing life or putting these digital entities, creating these autonomous economic agents, that all the individual moving parts are able to deliver their value and have better utilization because they're able to work on their own behalf. Rather than everything having to work under a command and control system from human beings. It's about reducing that complexity by having a very large population of simpler things working together. And that includes knowledge as well, building a collective intelligence about the network, such as these trust information predictions, knowledge about which markets intersect with which markets, who should be connected to who, building that as part of the network itself, for the benefit of all the users by just using the computing power of the network.
Great. How do I, you know, me as an individual, can I make money with Fetch, or is it supposed to be largely a utilitarian and making money?
No, you can make value in many ways. One, of course, is just because you might have a huge population of agents, for example, the ones that live on your mobile device. I have a habit now, much to the annoyance of everyone around me, at looking at pretty much anything and thinking, ooh, that's a population of agents, or ooh, that's a population of agents. And of course, you could look at vehicles and think, you know, that's most definitely a population of agents. All sorts of wonderful sensors and bits and pieces in there that can provide traffic information, climate information, and all sorts of other stuff that is useful potentially to someone. And the idea that you bring all of this data into play is really interesting. And I was once told by somebody who runs a data warehouse that his problem was that data didn't get up on its own 2 feet and sell itself. And he said, because of that, when I want to sell data, I have to get on an aeroplane, fly somewhere, sit in a room with a whole pile of people. And then several months later, we're in the same room with different people and a lot of lawyers and a contract that's 2 meters high. And then eventually we sell the data. And he said, so you can rest assured that unless that data is worth an absolute shedload of money, I'm not even going to get off the chair, let alone do anything about it. But what about all that other data, all the other stuff? The cost to deliver it exceeds its value. Well, Fetch solves that problem because now you can stick a little autonomous economic agent on all these data items. And you can do that at virtually no cost at all because it's the same kind of agent duplicated many times. And now the network is taking care of introducing that information to people who might want it. So it brings all this stuff into play. It's not the data we do use that's interesting in life. It's the data that we don't, either because we don't know it's there, it's too much hassle to integrate it into our lives, or the cost to use it exceeds its value. This is the kind of problem that this kind of thing solves by bringing all this into play, which also allows a more interesting range of problems to be solved because you've got more stuff to work with.
How much, now I'm switching gears again, Toby. So because you said you've been at it for many years, I know that you probably switched over or brought in the blockchain element recently. Where are you? Is this technology that's already been rolled out on the blockchain? Is it being utilized by the masses? Where are you with respect to the productizing this idea?
Well, we've had to build our own ledger. This is a piece of technology, or generally, that we didn't start out looking at blockchain thinking, well, let's build something out of this. We started out with a different problem that we didn't have a solution to, that blockchain type technologies led us to be able to make it work. But there are a bunch of things that we needed because this is a unique kind of problem. We're not just building a peer-to-peer network for value exchange. We're building a peer-to-peer network that allows a vast population of digital autonomous economic agents to exchange value and find each other and work together to solve problems. So not only have you got these individual computers on the network, but you've got all the agents that are connected. So that required a different kind of system. We needed a certain kind of performance when you're potentially supporting many, many billions of these entities. And we needed to be able to do much more complicated stuff in smart contracts relating to AI and machine learning algorithms that we couldn't do with any existing solution. So we had to roll our own. We're very, very pleased with the results. We've actually released the code, over 50,000 lines of lovingly crafted C++ is out there on GitHub for our scalable ledger. A lot of coffee went into that and quite a few beers as well, one way or the other. And then that's out there for people to download, compile and run should they wish to. We have a private test network, which is going to be coming a lot less private, a lot more public over the coming months so that more people can play with it. And they can get hold of the code and try it. Our unique virtual machine that powers our smart contracts and machine learning and AI and stuff relating to this concept we call useful proof of work. That's also been released, and we're going to be doing a community website and a whole bunch of documentation to get people involved in that. And, you know, there's lots of reasons why, just coming back to your previous question over how people can potentially make money out of that. This is part of the incentive model that, in the end, you run one of these nodes because you collect value by delivering services to agents and been part of building this collective intelligence and this trust information. And the more agents there are, the more need there is for these nodes to exist. So that's quite an effective incentivization scheme to ensure further decentralization on the network, which, of course, is hugely valuable in a space like this, because you do get more computing power, but also the network itself becomes bigger and more robust and can be reorganized in interesting ways, which is one of the things that we do. So the code's up and running. The system's up and running. It works. We're looking at a main full network release in the second half of next year. But in the meanwhile, there's lots to do and lots to try as the test net becomes available and more stuff can be downloaded and built.
Do you already have people using your test net? If so, how many and how fast are you growing?
We do. When you've got a network that can do so much, one of the problems is that you end up doing a little bit of a lot and not a lot of very much. And we're aware of certain marketplaces such as hospitality, which turned out to be an interesting one. But we could use Fetch to customize user interfaces to shortcut the process between what somebody might want and actually seeing the button to press to get it. Transportation, supply chains. Our CEO and co-founder is very, very familiar with this, and the fact that the individual parts of supply chains, you know, containers know when they're empty, but they can't do anything about it. The idea that you can potentially bring all these things to life is really interesting. And also, there's aspects of healthcare and energy, as I mentioned earlier, are all areas where we're building. Agents right now, I'm working with commercial partners to see how Fetch performs in these spaces and delivering that value. But we're also acutely aware that as we make all of this code and these systems public for people to try and attach agents to things to see what Fetch does with it, that'll be very interesting as well. So that's a lot of the effort that's going on right now, gradually building the size of the network in these different areas that we know work and letting Fetch itself as a piece of technology explore intersections between those marketplaces that we hadn't imagined, which in itself is really interesting because, you know, you never know, right? Humans know. They look at something and say, yeah, a really good customer for this data is this person or that person. But what about that other one over there that you didn't imagine? And when you've got a network that's constantly exploring that, then that in itself is a really interesting thing.
So the current users sound more like developers rather than real users, or did I get that wrong?
Oh, no, they're real users. We're working with a number of companies, working in a hospitality company called YQ. Working with healthcare equipment, a company called Cluster Market as well. We're members of the Mobi Alliance, looking at transportation-related applications of this technology. So we are actually building real agents that do real things and putting them on our test network and actually building these examples of this technology working. And that's hugely important for us as well. You know, it's as you start loading up this network with more and more stuff, you get to know what things work and what things don't. And you get to give the whole thing a shakedown.
And let's take that hospitality example. How are they using it?
Well, one of the key parts of that was that when a lot of these, particularly hotels, are trying to encourage people to use mobile apps to order things in bars and the restaurants and other facilities and other services. And one of the things that's problematic with that is context. And when you've got this app with a huge number of buttons and a lot of menus and a lot of options, as we all know, you know, every button you have to press, you lose a bunch of people. We know that from websites, right? And ordering. This is why we have things like one-click ordering, because every page you have to go through, a percentage of the people just drop out of the process because it's just too inconvenient. It's made worse when you've got a huge number of options. You're desperately trying to find the beer that you want and you're going through pages of this stuff. You know, I saw this actually at an airport recently. I can't remember which one it was. Was it Chicago? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it was some airport in North America. And you sat down, there was an iPad there, and you could order your drink and some food. And I was very thirsty and very hungry, and I gave up. There was pages of this stuff. There was too much to do. It was too complicated. So how we were using this was that by understanding the context, like, for example, you're turning up in a bar, there's a football match on, you're with some friends. The chances are that what you order is going to be very different if you're there for one night and you're by yourself and you've got a book in your hand. And been able to try and piece all of this together from your preferences and your representative agents and where you are in the hotel and the kind of things that are surrounding you allows you to shrink those options right down and provide something that's far more tailored to the individual, but also more effective upselling. Because sometimes actually you would fancy a bag of peanuts with your beer. But what you don't want is for that to be offered to you if you're allergic to peanuts, or if you don't want them, or if you've already got a big bag of peanuts. And it's that kind of context stuff, that kind of ability to offer people things that they want or might want and get that increasingly more accurate that is actually really valuable. And that ability to customize and tailor user interfaces to meet the individual is one of the aspects of Fetch that we didn't imagine a year ago, for example.
And currently, because you're in the test phase, I'm imagining this hospitality company is utilizing your platform for free, or do they pay for it?
Well, bear in mind that Fetch itself, as a network, is public, non-permission network. It's all the code is open source. As more of this stuff comes out, anybody and everybody is free to download this stuff and build things on Fetch. You know, this is a tokenized business, but the token is the primary form of value exchange between agents in that space, and it needs to be that way because, of course, in order to ensure integrity on one of these decentralized networks, you need to have control over the incentive mechanisms. So the economics simply don't work unless you have such a mechanism. And as token holders ourselves, as the amount of value that one can get from these tokens on the network as a result of the connections, the ability to deliver value, you know, that benefits us. And then there's a commercial arm that we have this expertise in building all of this. And there are cases where particularly some aspects of healthcare, for example, where actually private networks are more appropriate because even though all of the communications and transactions might be entirely encrypted, sometimes even the mere knowledge that they took place is an invasion of privacy. And that's, I guess, the difference between an intranet and an internet. So there's many different ways in which this stuff works. But the main Fetch network itself is a public network and is free for anybody to use. And once that main network is released in the second half of next year, that's what we expect.
Okay, and how will the tokens be generated, and how many of them will be there eventually?
Eventually there will be, and for those that are interested in all of this, we do actually have a tokenomics paper that's on our website that talks about this. About 1.1 billion tokens, but they are infinitely subdividable. So in the end, you can work with much smaller proportions of these tokens, much in the same way people throw around 0.0001 of an ETH, for example. It's not like that limits your ability to be able to do things with the tokens. So yes, eventually there will be over a billion of these agents tokens in circulation.
And how are they generated?
There, of course, is a token sale, which is a great way of getting tokens into people's hands, where there is a nonprofit foundation, which is tasked with the purpose of ensuring that tokens end up in the hands of people that are using them for the utility purpose for which they were intended. There are mining rewards in the early days of the network to further incentivize the setting up of nodes as the value of the intelligence information on the network grows. But that's very much a short-term thing because at some point the value that node operators get is from, as we mentioned earlier, delivering those services to the agents that are connected to the network. So there are a great number of ways in which the tokens will end up in people's hands. And as people who were originally creating all of this, it's in our best interest for as many tokens as possible to be in as many people's hands as possible, because that enables those tokens to end up in digital entities, in all these agents, and lets them start doing all of this work, this machine-to-machine economy that we're building.
And they can go to www.fetch.ai and they can get your white paper, your tokenomics, all the information that they need, your token.
Absolutely. So fetch.ai is the place to go. We've got economics papers there. We've got the token economics paper, the original technical introduction paper back from earlier this year. There's also paper detailing all of the technical details about how our scalable ledger works. And of course, it'll point you at things like our Telegram, social networking, also at our GitHub. So for those that want to actually start poking their way through the code and having a look, they are able to do so. And we're releasing more code all the time. So that's very much the tip of the iceberg from that perspective.
As we start winding down, Toby, the other question that I had was, who should be interested in fetch.ai? Can you give me your target segments? Who should be interested? And then the next question, obviously, that I will ask is, how do these people find you, right? But let's start with the first question. Are these businesses? Are these developers? Are these non-technical, not non-techie type of users? Who are you hoping to address? And then how will they find you?
I'm pretty sure everybody has a very bad answer to that question, so I'll try and narrow it down a bit. But let's start with everybody, and then I'll sort of refine it. But you see, this is one of the problems in it that I work with this stuff every day, and I've got an idea in my mind of who will find value in Fetch. But the reality is that who will eventually find value in Fetch is completely different. I was having a conversation with someone recently, and we were talking about when Apple originally launched the App Store. It was just an avalanche of surprises that individuals out there had great ideas and suddenly had the power, the ability to be able to bring them to life, just like that. And you think of all the innovation that we saw in such a short space of time, whole new genres of entertainment and applications and things that no one had ever considered, but somebody had thought of it. And that's one of the wonderful things about stuff like this, that it gives the ability to do things to individuals, gives the power to create to individuals where they wouldn't have had that before. And I think that's super exciting. But of course, you know, we're talking to people in the spaces that we're aware of, and anybody out there involved in fields of transportation and mobility and energy, particularly those connected to smart cities and looking at how these things could be structured in the future. Of course, we're very, very interested in talking and working with people like that, because we believe that Fetch is a really good way of optimizing solutions to those problems. And we would like to investigate how that can be done and build more examples of it. And then, of course, there's developers. You know, this is a space that thrives off enthusiasts and developers. Ever since that original Bitcoin paper came out, it's just attracted people who just want to tinker and play and investigate and think and try. And that's the exciting space that we're in. And we have something which is different. that is designed to support this huge environment where digital entities get things done. Our machine-to-machine economy, our massive decentralized world for autonomous economic agents to solve problems on your behalf. And quite honestly, what I imagine people will be able to do with that space is nothing in comparison to what other people will be able to do with that space.
Wow, that is pretty exciting. Great. So, and where would you like all of these people to find you? I know we already have the website, fetch.ai. Are there user communities where the users can interact, talk to each other, help each other? Is there a Slack group, a Telegram group? Where do you want them to go?
Telegram is the easiest and quickest way. I think that's a great way of interacting with us. There's a lot of us there. We love talking to people, and it's a great way of interacting with us at Fetch directly. But we're not hard to find. We have our offices in Cambridge. All the details of where we are and where we work is all on our website. And there are many, many, many ways of contacting us. From a community and a developer support perspective, we have a community website that we're putting the finishing touches to at the moment, that we expect to be out in the very near future. We'll link through to that, of course, from our website. And that's where people can build fetch type smart contracts, build AI and machine learning applications on the ledger, run the code, test the code, interact with other people, and get help and access to documentation. So there's a lot of that stuff coming. But in the end, the route to all of those things is through our fetch.ai website, where we keep all of the ways of contacting us, either just to watch what's going on or to take part. We make sure all of that is right there.
Toby, it's almost impossible, given how big the vision is and how it's more like an app store. That was a great analogy, where we cannot even predict how people will use this, because you're suddenly putting power into the hands of curious, smart, innovative type of people. So I cannot do any justice, I feel, in such a short session. We're certainly going to have you back multiple times. I can see that. But any closing thoughts, any points that you wanted to mention, any questions I did not ask?
I just think that we're all collectively in an extraordinary space. We all know that this space is going to change the way that we live our lives, change shift the balance of control over the stuff that belongs to us, and enable a whole new kind of way in which problems can be solved and things can be presented. And that is incredibly exciting. And it's an enormous privilege, I think, for all of us to be tinkering around in this space. And I'm enormously excited by what we can do. And when you look at blockchain in isolation, and you shouldn't, you know, blockchain and decentralized ledger technologies, they're a part of a puzzle. And when you start integrating them with other technologies, all the incredibly exciting things that are going on in the multiple agent space, multi-agent space, and machine learning and AI and decentralized and distributed computing, and you start joining all of these things together, and the kind of stuff that you can do is just extraordinary. And I think that's a lot of fun. And at the same time, watching all these new things just come out of nowhere. Yeah, it's a great space to be in.
Well, and we wish you the very best. Thank you very much, Toby, for joining us. And you have a fantastic evening. And we look forward to having you back in the near future.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.